Sullivan County for over 20 years. On Facebook, Instagram, and at sullivanrenaissance.org. From the Alzheimer's Association, Hudson Valley Chapter. Ongoing educational programs and support groups in Dutchess, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Sullivan, Ulster, and Westchester Counties. ALZ.org.
Good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the local edition, local news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And it is Wednesday on the local edition. That means we'll be checking in with James B. Huntington for the latest on jobs and the economy around here, around the world. It is Work Shift Live. That's in the second half of the program. Up first, what we do on Wednesdays, first thing we do, is we check in with the River Reporter's Liam Mayo to see what's happening in our listening area. And he's on the phone with us right now, live. Hello, Liam. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. How about you?
Great. Welcome back to the program. So, there's been some news recently about drug enforcement in Sullivan County. And we heard that the DA Galligan is bringing the Hope Not Handcuffs program to our area, or is that, in fact, other people are doing it? What are the details on this?
Yeah, so the Hope Not Handcuffs program is a program that involves community-run volunteer workers partnering with local law enforcement agencies as well as local rehabilitation centers to provide a pathway to recovery rather than to jail for people suffering from substance abuse. So what happens is someone who has a problem with addiction or suffering from addiction comes into a police station, and instead of them being booked and brought into the legal system in that way, the police contact a volunteer from Hope Not Handcuffs who comes in and works with the person to get them to a treatment facility where they can rehabilitate and hopefully recover from their addiction. At the same time, any of the charges that would have been brought against them for possession of controlled substances or other related minor misdemeanors get essentially held until the treatment program is completed, at which time they'll be removed. So it just gets people the help and the treatment they need rather than sending them straight to jail.
And has there been any reaction about these steps from the community?
I haven't heard, like, individual community members how they've been reacting, but a lot of prominent figures in the community have expressed their support for the program. At the press conference where it was announced, we had Aileen Gunther and Mike Martucci. They both showed up and they both talked about how wonderful this program was. Sheriff Schiff came and talked about how it was really great getting to see people like go to treatment instead of having them suffer more for their addiction. People in law enforcement especially were talking about how this does not provide a path to safety for people who have been selling drugs. This is a program specifically aimed at people who are suffering from addiction rather than the people who have been providing the drugs that get people addicted in the first place.
Yeah.
And Sullivan County law enforcement is planning to keep cracking down on those people, but that's sort of where the law enforcement community stance is at the moment.
All right, and I'm just going to mention to the listener here quick, this is kind of like a breaking upcoming news item here, but basically upcoming programming item. We just did a long and extensive interview with Maya Zolovitz, And she's the author of many books, and her latest is coming out next week. It's called Undoing Drugs, The Untold Story of Harm Reduction and the Future of Addiction. So if this story that Liam's talking about is of interest to you locally, you're going to want to hear that. We did that interview. Bill Williams did that interview as part of the Kingfisher Project. We're going to do, usually we do Kingfisher Project on Local Edition the first Tuesday of the month. We're going to do it the first and second Tuesday of the month starting on August 3rd. But that conversation goes much deeper on a number of these issues, talking about harm reduction and also just the essentially the racist underpinnings of the war on drugs and the misguided preconceptions of both law enforcement and medical industries when it comes to addiction. So that was that. It's interesting to me that you're talking about that now, because I just sat through a 40-minute long conversation. There's a deep dive on that, and there's lots to say on this. So thank you for giving us that local update on it.
Thank you for giving the more complicated, in-depth look at it, because it definitely is a very complicated issue that can't be summarized in like a 5-minute snippet or anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Kingfisher Project is for like destigmatization. They've been on the whole giving people, making sure people get the care they need rather than just getting thrown into the legal system from the beginning here at Radio Catskill. So that's great too. But staying on the issue of drugs in the community, but on a totally different story, recreational cannabis now legal in New York, but not all towns are allowing the sales. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that's something that's going to come a little more into prominence in the coming months as more and more towns decide what to do about it. Essentially, the legalization of cannabis made it so that it is legal to smoke and to possess throughout the state, as I understand it, but individual towns can decide to ban, or they can decide to opt out of the legalization of distribution centers and dispensaries and like smoking lounges in their borders. So an individual town can't ban cannabis, but they can say, hey, we don't want people selling it here. We don't want people setting up smoking lounges here.
Right. I was looking at some reporting about this out there, and I thought one of the more interesting responses, I think, came from the town supervisor of Forestburg on this, who basically said he's kind of neutral on the issue, but in terms of his town, he would be willing to vote against it just because, as he put it, it's a, quote, bedroom community in their township without a lot of commercial businesses to begin with, at least commercial storefront businesses anyway. And I thought, well, that's a sensible decision just based on what a given town's needs are. But I'm sure people's preconceptions over drug use and law enforcement and that whole history will play into how various townships are voting as well.
Yeah, the business point is definitely interesting. I've heard that from a lot of towns as well. The Calicoon held a meeting they had Sheriff Schiff at their pub, at one of their last town board meeting to talk about it and to like give them a little bit of background information for a future decision they will make to opt out or not. And a lot of what the discussion there was, well, New York State is only legalizing it because New York State wants the business and the taxation from marijuana. And that's not a business we want in this town. So there definitely is an angle of just pure business or people treating it as a business decision rather than treating it as a drug legalization decision. But then on the other hand, there is also the issues of it being a drug and the issues involved with legalizing any drug. Another thing discussed at that meeting was that in a rural area like this, essentially getting anywhere means driving. So if a rural town opens a dispensary or a smoking lounge and there's any consumption that happens on site, that will almost undoubtedly lead to impaired driving. And that is itself a potential reason to ban it in a certain town.
And so is that the sheriff's main concern when he comes to township to talk about this?
Yeah, that was the sheriff's main concern. I've heard that concern from the DA as well, where it just greatly increases the risk of impaired driving from it. They also have been talking about other states that have legalized it, specifically Colorado, and those states seeing the rate of driving accidents like skyrocket since legalization. I've been looking at the studies or trying to figure out like whether that's accurate. So far, like, some say one thing, others say another. They seem to lean towards there being more impaired accidents and more fatalities after legalization, but it's very uncertain and very situationally dependent.
Yeah.
But that was another of the sheriff's points, was that we don't know yet how this is going to play out, so let's wait on it. Let's be number two to do it instead of number one to do it, so that we can learn from all the lessons that happen when number one does it.
Well, that brings up another question then. As far as you can see right now, is there going to be another window? Like, towns are kind of being asked to decide this now. Is there going to be another opportunity for them to change their mind later, or another window of re-certification, so to speak, on this?
Yeah, so they'll be able to change their minds in one direction, but not in the other. So if you, as a township, opt out of the law right now, so like if you decide that you don't want dispensaries or smoking lounges or the like in your town, you can later on decide that you want them and repeal the opt-out law. If you don't decide to do it, if you say it's fine, and I think the deadline is December 31, but it's sometime in December, if that deadline passes without you as a township having passed that law, then you can't do anything with it in the future. So you get to say yes in the future if you say no now, but you don't get to change your mind and say, actually, we don't want this in our town, if you have already said that you do by the deadline.
Okay, and another programming note here for the listener is that Patricio Rubio, not as a member of Radio Catskill, but as a reporter for Sullivan County Democrat, did a deep dive on this in the most recent edition of the Democrat, and he will be on with Tim Bruno on Radio Catskill on Saturday to talk about more of this in depth in terms of what the towns are saying, thinking, and possibly voting at this point, which way folks are leaning. So again, that'll be on Catskill starting at 10 o'clock Saturday morning. And Liam, we've probably only got time real quick for one more of these stories. There's the PA and Environmental Quality Board, or there's the County Legislature Rescue Plan Act funding. What do you want to hit real quick?
We can hit the Sullivan County Legislature story.
Okay, great.
So with that, the county has, both at the county and the town level, been deciding what to do with funding from the American Rescue Plan Act, which is funding intended to get the economy back up and running post-pandemic. But they've been running into problems where they can only use this money for very specific things. It's like, if your municipality has incurred losses from the pandemic, you can use it to make those up. You can use it for premium pay, or you can use it for water, sewer, and broadband. And those restrictions leave a lot of town spending off the table. So there's not a ton, or there are very specific ways you can use it. And the county, at the last legislative meeting, decided to use it for three things. They would use it for the roads to fund, like, just various road improvements. They would use it for capital projects at Sullivan County Community College, and they would use it to give essential workers premium pay.
Okay, all right. Well, I guess real quick, what happened with the Pennsylvania Environmental Quality Board?
Oh, the Pennsylvania Environmental Quality Board decided to, or they rather they voted to get into the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is a regional carbon dioxide budget trading program. And that is essentially just a program that puts a budget on carbon and it sets like a certain limit on how much carbon can be emitted. That limit steadily goes down over the next few years. I believe it counts for the years 2022 through 2030. And it lets the different carbon emitters, like power plants and the like, trade their carbon budgets in order to keep like overall carbon going down and help the environment in that way, while not putting too heavy a burden on any one particular emitter.
Okay. Well, Liam, I want to thank you for that update, and I'll remind you, listener, that latest edition of the River Reporter goes on sale tomorrow. You can hear Liam Mayo giving us the latest news on the weekend, this weekend, with the local news updates, and he'll be back for this in-depth local news update that we do every Wednesday afternoon, next Wednesday afternoon on the local edition. Liam, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is a local edition, local news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. We'll be right back with Work Shift Live in just one moment.
Hello, I'm Thane Peterson, host of WJFF's Living Jazz Show. You know, jazz is probably the greatest gift we've ever given to world culture. And every Friday from noon to 2, I bring you the best, the most interesting, the most current jazz you're going to hear anywhere. Please join me. Living Jazz, Fridays from noon to 2 on WJFF.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected. On air, online, on your smartphone, and on your smart speaker.
Right now, it is time once again for the latest on jobs and the economy around our area, around the country, and around the world. And for that, on a Wednesday evening, we turn to James B. Huntington, host of Work Shift Live. Hello, James.
Good evening, Jason. Good evening, listeners.
Well, so here we are once again on a Wednesday talking about the economy, talking about employment, and following this ongoing story of folks working and returning to work. And part of that conversation has been the question of people working remotely, and is that going to change the scope of how people work in the future? Is there going to be more of that, or what? What are you seeing? What's been happening in terms of people returning to the office?
Well, over the last 30 years, remote work has been a pendulum. It's gone back and forth from common to rare to common. You have companies discovering or rediscovering the supposed advantages of working from home, saying how wonderful the productivity is, and then that goes for 5 or 10 years, depending on the company, and they change their minds and they make everyone come back to the office. So actually, before the pandemic, there was a trend away from people working remotely, and they were building gorgeous places in their office with the likes of yoga studios and sushi bars to try to get people to come in the office and work as long hours as possible. Then with the pandemic, it seems like there's been a lot of rediscovery of the advantages and disadvantages, really, of working remotely. A lot of workers would like to work from home. There are problems with this, such as often the wrong workers are the ones who prefer to work from home the most. But
you mean those less likely to be self-starters and self-moderators?
Exactly. That's something I've seen so often, is that the very people you would trust the least to work out of sight of management are the ones who want to work the most hours from home. If it's a consistent productivity thing where you can measure performance, that works very well. But when it's not, as in a typical cubicle job, it often in real life turns out to be people working less. So companies have discovered this problem, and then they've gone back, and they've said, oh, how nice it would be if people could just organize themselves at home. Then you have the situations with real estate savings and workers themselves incurring expenses to compensate for their commuting, their costs of having things, having space really, and where they live for proper work setups. It's a complicated issue, and they seem to make it more complicated in some ways in business by rediscovering the wheel on this thing. So it's going to vary a great deal company by company the next several years. It's has not fallen out in anywhere near what's happened. There is also a lot of dissatisfaction about some things of working from home, both from employees and management. For example, these Zoom calls really do not work as well as in-person meetings. And that's not even a secret anymore. And saying that they do, saying that it's just the exact equivalent of working from the office with all the remote software and stuff is thoroughly naive.
So, not to put words in your mouth, but to sum up, are you saying don't believe the hype?
I'm saying don't get sucked in by thinking that it's some wonderful panacea that everyone work from home. It's a 30-year-old issue, and companies and other organizations have found out that it simply does not work out all that well.
Okay, well, there you go. And but I'm sure we'll keep talking about this because it does keep coming up. Especially
I could
right
fill
now.
Several hours of program with this subject alone. I've written extensively on it.
And I read an article this week that was like talking about the extent to which, Apple built this, billion-dollar facility in San Francisco, but then the other pressure affecting this story in places like that are the fact that these companies have built major centers of employment for people to go physically, but the housing costs have risen, and people aren't making enough to stay in a place where they could easily commute there. Now, that's becoming an issue, too. Conversely, if more people telecommute, then that impacts the economy that depends on those workers coming into a city or a working center area that ancillary businesses that benefit from that traffic flow.
Yes, and for example, that's something that has just savaged business areas in Manhattan, all the restaurants that are dependent on people going there because they're in offices. The people haven't been in offices. Many different things. There are going to be some real shifts, but again, this has been a pendulum. It's gone back and forth. The companies often also cannot have much less real estate if they are letting people work from home only, say, 2 days a week, which is common. They're still going to need people or space for these people just as if they were working there 5 days a week. And yes, businesses will have to adjust. And if you have a business, a restaurant, or anything else that's dependent on people being in your area because they're in the office, you're gambling. It will change back and forth over time.
Now, what else might change over time? How about the amount of time that people work? Work hours getting longer or shorter in the future?
Yes, this is something that's been in real conflict, some surprising things. There are 40 hour a week, which we still have in our minds as the basic amount of time to work. That's been the standard all the way back since the 30s. That's 90 years now.
But haven't Americans, at least in America, I don't know about the rest of the world, been working longer hours in many jobs over the last decade or so?
Many are, and it's more than the last decade. People, employers in some ways have been sneaking in expectations of longer and longer hours. That's also something that happens when the more conscientious people who are working from home, they are finding or have long since found, I should say, that there's a tendency to work extra hours, to work extra time, to be checking that email and such in the evening. The same things have been happening in some places with vacations. A lot of this depends on company culture, but it's interesting. Historically, we went down from the 80-hour-a-week things we had at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution gradually down to 40 hours in the 60s. Now there are pressures both ways. I'm reading yet another piece that popped out in the blue of the New York Times. It said 8 hours a day, 5 days a week is not working for us, as if this is something new. And there were people in the 60s projecting that everyone would be working as little as 15 hours a week when we came around to the time we're in now, and that has certainly not materialized. There are pressures both ways. I think there is something humanly, almost genetic, about working 40 hours a week, that it may really be the appropriate amount of time. Not 50, not 60. Any study will show you that productivity per hour drops, sometimes a great deal, when you're working over 40 hours a week. But I have no evidence, nothing to hear, that if you work only 20 or 30 hours a week that you're more productive per hour. That amount seems to be the right thing. So it may continue to hang around there with pressures both ways, with people saying that they should be working less, but also people de facto then in their real jobs ending up working a lot more. All these people who are doing work activities outside of normal hours, and not because they've skipped work hours, normal work hours, but because it's there, and, well, there are a lot of factors, but I predict that it's going to stay at somewhere around 40 hours for a long time.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that. James, we've only got a minute left. Do you want a quick touch on the inflation rate and what's up with that?
5.4%. That was the finding actually last week. It's up. It's not gigantic, but the real factors here to realize that number one, there's an obvious reason for pent-up demand and such, and people are buying things, doing things they weren't able to do. Number two, a few specific areas like food and used cars are contributing a great deal to that inflation rate that have gone up. We have the Fed Chair Powell saying in his usual sober way that it's not going to go on forever, don't worry about it, but just the same, they're keeping an eye on it. So if we see 8% in another month or so, we might have something to worry about, but if it's still at 5, that may only go on for a few months. So hang on, it will be temporary.
Okay, all right, there you go. Well, I think we should probably get going, but anything else you want to talk about that you still want to talk about next week? We'll add that back to the list and try to get back to it again. But you'll be on next week, right?
Yes, I will.
All right, well, there you have it. Come back next week for more on the latest of jobs and the economy around the area, around the country, around the world with James B. Huntington. It's been Work Shift Live. Thank you so much, James.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, listeners.
Okay, and that's going to do it for the local edition tonight. Hope you have a good evening ahead. We've got a trailer talk with Sabrina Artel coming up next. You want to stay tuned for that. This is WJFF Jeffersonville, and we are keeping you connected.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, your NPR station for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from
Van Gorder's Furniture, featuring Lodge and Adirondack styles, as well as rustic collections. With showrooms at Lake Wallenpaupack, downtown Honesdale, and Milford, PA, Van Gorder's Furniture brings the outdoors inside. VanGorders.com. From Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Keshekta, New York, and on the web at DogMountainLodge.com. And from listeners like you.
Okay.